Welcome to Eureka Street Crypto. This is my anti-professional crypto channel. I'm just a barely sane dude who fell down the cryptocurrency rabbit hole. This channel is my fumbling attempt to communicate myself outside my own head about my journey in the crypto space. It is basically my brain dump. None of this is actual financial advice. Good morning, everybody. I'm Eureka John, and you're at Eureka Street Crypto, broadcasting live from Leander, Texas. What day is it today? It's November 28th, and it is 6:21 in the morning, and it's a Sunday, and Thanksgiving holiday is just about over. Well, it's over, and I'm trying to put Christmas lights up on my tree, but not up on my tree, on my house. Doing the whole Clark Griswold thing, and it's been raining out, so that hasn't been possible because I don't want to slide down the ladder. But it's on the way. It's coming, and maybe I'll show some pictures of my huge Christmas light project going on. So anyway, welcome to the show. This is my morning brain dump, aka video blog of my journey through the crypto space. And every day I try to articulate things that I learned in crypto, articles that I've read, videos I've watched, podcasts that I've listened to, even books that I've read. Yes, I still do read books. And this is my attempt to try to articulate that type of stuff in this space, because it is an ever-growing, ever-evolving, rapidly changing just cryptopia. And right now, we are all blindly just kind of going through it the best we can with the little bit of background knowledge that we had prior to jumping into the crypto space, whether that be programming, or whether that be economics, or even psychology and philosophy, finance, you know, right? Of course. I come from a theology background, you know, and then just general manufacturing business as well. Or what we're going to talk about today, legal background. So law is making itself, hold on, let me fix this camera just a little bit. Okay, so law is making its way into the crypto space, mainly via DAOs. So it's interesting to see, because previously, and as we saw with the DAO hack, and I'll explain what that is here in a little bit. Programmers and people who were into the crypto space and devs, the developers in the space, would say code is law. You know, your crypto ushers in an entirely new paradigm shift in which the laws of the land don't really apply in the metaverse and in the crypto space, because code suddenly becomes law and you don't have to rely on human intermediaries. And this can be seen in decentralized finance. We can subvert the banking system. We can subvert the credit system, and we can go around that, and it takes out the middleman and it allows everybody opportunity to participate and enjoy the fruits of investing that were previously only allocated and given authorization to those who are accredited investors, you know. And to become accredited investor, it varies in a lot of cases, but a lot of times you have to have at least $250,000 worth of assets. And you know, a lot of people don't. I mean, it's definitely, you know, they're getting us focused on people's skin color and gender and all this other stuff. But really, the main systemic oppression happens financially through this stuff that a lot of people don't even know about. And a lot of this happens through the concept of accredited investors. And So let's move on. Let's take a quick look at the old CoinGecko. I don't really harp on price too much. I'm not sponsored by anybody. I'm not shilling anything. None of this is financial advice. I'm not a technical advisor. I don't know any of these graphs or anything like that. But I do kind of like to look at them as, you know, like a sports standings page in the back of the newspaper. When you get a newspaper, you open it up and you go check the Major League Baseball or the NFL stats at the back of the page to see where your team is, see what percentage of wins they have and stuff like that. It's kind of what I do here with the crypto markets and the crypto projects based on market cap here. to see where everybody is and just kind of get a general feel for it. So, of course, we have Bitcoin number one. Bitcoin is king. And Ethereum right there behind it, 4,115 for Ethereum. It hasn't really moved much. Bitcoin's taken a pretty dramatic dip. Binance coin, Bitcoin's at 54,558. Binance coin is 598.40. Tether's a dollar. So, Solana, because it's a stable coin, right? Solana is 191.02. Number five spot. Cardano is number six spot at $1.152. So Solana has overtaken Cardano and XRP, 93 cents. USDC, also a stable coin. Polkadot, 33.94. The Doge, 20 cents. And I always tell a lot of people just jumping into crypto, you know, I'm like, just at least change over some of your dollars and get into the crypto space that's 100% safe. And you can at least, at the very minimum, just lock it up in some kind of, you know, BlockFi or Celsius or something like that. And you can get maybe, you know, between 4 to 8% or something like that on your bank account. And that's a hell of a lot better than you're going to get from Wells Fargo or Chase. That's for sure. You might get like, you know, 0.1% at best. And that's called high yield savings. You know, I was in a part of a credit union, PenFed Credit Union, and I got 0.1% for my savings. It was absolutely ridiculous. And they called that high yield. So, yeah, Avalanche moved up to number 11 and it shoved itself right in between the two dogs, Dogecoin and Shiba Inu. Crypto.com has made its way up there with all its advertising. It's been doing tons of marketing with UFC. It's now going, the Staples Arena, I believe, is going to be named the Crypto.com Arena. It's heavily sponsors the Philadelphia 76ers and tons of other entities. Sports stadiums are now the new thing for crypto projects and exchanges to be going after, to be named on. So yeah, interesting to see how all this is developing in the mainstream public. You know, even what's his name, Mark Wahlberg Matt Damon did an entire commercial about cryptocurrency. So yeah, you know when Matt Damon's getting involved, things are mainstream. So anyway, so yeah, I get tons of newsletters, right? And I'm a member of the Bankless DAO, and I get that newsletter as well. And I see a lot of these people around the Bankless DAO. And today featured in, or a couple days ago, maybe it was yesterday, featured in one of the newsletters that I got was Eagle. And Legal Eagle. And he's a member of the Bankless DAO, Eagle Lex right here. And I'll show you his Twitter page. And I hear him a lot of times on community calls and stuff like that. Let me check and make sure this screen. Okay, so it shows. Okay, I hear him a lot of times on community calls, and the guy knows what he's talking about, and he's a really deep into obviously the legal space, and looks like he's working on a legal guild coordinator for the Aragon project, which is kind of a governance system for DAOs, and they work on a lot of the legal aspects of DAOs. But yeah, DAOs are coming into a new type of territory and the legal territory. And when you get people all together and a lot of different people and different ideas all together in a space, even though they say it's run by smart contracts and that code is law, there is still a human aspect to it. And where there's a human aspect to it, you have to set rules and boundaries, and people will find a way to get around those rules and boundaries. So how do you enforce those rules and boundaries? You know, first of all, you have to set the rules, which is what lawyers do. And then how to enforce those is another thing that lawyers do. So let's take a look at his article because it's really good. I read a bunch of stuff and I have a backlog of things I want to talk about, but this kind of stood out to me and I've been wanting to talk about, a little bit about something legal lately. So here we go. Let me take a quick sip of my kombucha tea. You know, if I were able to be sponsored by these guys, I would. Health Aid Kombucha. Hey, man, Health Aid, if you guys are listening, I'll take some free kombucha, right? It's cayenne cleanse. It's got a little kick to it. It gets up in the sinuses and yeah, it's like hair of the dog without actually being hair of the dog in the morning. Ah, yeah, put some hair on your chest. All right, so anyway, so can hacking be lawful? This is an interesting headline for this article. So I will read some snippets of this article. What makes blockchain particularly potent, in the words of Primavera de Filippi and Aaron Wright, is its ability to facilitate the creation of resilient, tamper-resistant, and automated code-based systems that operate globally, providing people with new financial and contractual tools that could replace key societal functions. So, yeah, what does that mean? That means a lot of key functions in our society could just be automated and replaced with code. And you see this happening already. You see this happening in things like criminal systems that can go from state to state. Child support is starting to have that, in which, you know, if you have a child in one state, you're going to still have to pay child support, even if you live 10 states away, because those states will talk to each other. Now, it's not really that efficient, but, you know, there's a lot of code-based systems that are being changed over now. And the legal system is notoriously far behind. And a lot of that original code was written in Fortran and COBOL and stuff like that. And if you don't know what that is, you're probably a millennial or younger. But for those of us who are Gen X and boomers and everything else, yeah, we generally know what Fortran and COBOL is, because that is what a lot of the original government computer systems were written in. So in the government software. And they're trying to find, they're pulling people out of retirement to be able to that understand these languages so they can change everything over to new systems. it's been a sticky process, I'll bet, to say the least. Anyway, so blockchains enable people to build their own systems of rules using smart contracts, which are enforced under by the underlying protocol of a blockchain-based network. Due to the possibilities offered by blockchain technology, it has often been said that these systems can create order without relying on the law. It is sometimes said that the code itself is law. In practice, developers have the capacity to create tools and services that avoid jurisdictional rules and operate transnationally. So yeah, the here's right there. Code is law, and that's what that's the attitude of a lot of developers. So the creation of a space which is not bound by the laws of nations is advocated by Barlow's Declaration of Independence of the Cyberspace. I don't know this, so I'm going to go ahead and open that link in new tab and take a look at it here afterwards. It seems that blockchain technology may not permit this utopian dream to materialize smoothly. Many operators in the industry are aware that not all blockchain-based applications comply with existing laws, especially when it comes to highly regulated financial services and anti-money laundering provisions. Nevertheless, many users of the blockchain protocols believe that code and smart contracts as an expression of private autonomy and contractual freedom may substitute for traditional contractual agreements. Yeah, so people say that the blockchain protocols can substitute for these contractual agreements, and this might not be the case in the case of like SEC and CATF. Where is it? I was listening to the podcast with DeFi Dad and the Bankless guys, and I did not realize that the SEC and CFTC were two separate entities, and the CFTC, the SEC manages securities versus commodities. When something's declared a security, it has a lot of legal liability to it. But whenever something is declared a commodity, it's not so much. And a lot of these currencies and these NFTs and stuff like that, they do not want to be declared securities, because then a lot of complications come with it and a lot of regulation. So that's what the SEC does, and that does it kind of as an overarching thing. The CFTC, I believe, focuses specifically on futures, and that also has a lot of implications. Anyway, I digress. Where was I going with that? Okay, so due to the possibilities offered by blockchain technology, that these systems can create order without relying on the law. And it says that sometimes code itself is a law, but in practice, developers have been able to have the capacity to create tools and services that avoid jurisdictional rules that operate transnationally. And that's where I got the SEC and CFTC, because those are within the United States. And a lot of these code is law type of smart contracts, they go across borders. And how do you do that? So the creation of a space which is not bound by the laws of nations, okay, is advocated by Barlow's Declaration of Independence of the Cyberspace. Okay, so it seems that blockchain technology may not permit this utopian dream to materialize smoothly. Many operators in the industry are aware that not all blockchain-based applications comply with existing laws, especially when it comes to highly regulated financial services and anti-money laundering positions, like the SEC would cover. Many users of blockchain protocols believe that code and smart contracts as an expression of private autonomy and contractual freedom may substitute for contractual legal agreements. Not surprisingly, different opinions exist on the matter, right? Well, lately, the issue has been scrutinized with respect to a hack that removed a $16 million US dollars from the decentralized finance protocol indexed finance. I didn't hear about this hack. I've heard about a billion other hacks, but $16 million is a pretty large, pretty dang large hack for sure. So index finance is based on Ethereum and produces tokens that tracks market indexes. So a hacker claimed the assets backing the value of the index tokens by finding a vulnerability in the protocol's smart contracts. The attack has been described as a typical DeFi exploit, typical in quotes, because there's several different types of DeFi exploits, and that's a pretty typical one, apparently. So let's see here real quick. I had another article. Where did it go? Oh, man, I closed it out. Anyway, it was the top five. Five most common smart contract vulnerabilities. So let's take a quick look at this. And I like that picture of the praying mantis in front of the computer. Here's five pretty common ones. Integer arithmetic errors, getting integer arithmetic wrong. Smart contracts generally express numbers as integers due to lack of floating point support. Quite common in financial software anyway. Using integers to represent values requires stepping down to small units in order to allow for sufficient precision. This example is expressing values in cents rather than dollars. It would be impossible to represent 0.5 50 cents otherwise. In fact, smart contracts usually step down much further, with 18 decimal places being supported by many tokens. And when you're dealing with large commodities, you'll see that decimal point move quite far. So gas, and then a number is two vulnerability is block gas limit vulnerabilities. The block gas limit is Ethereum's way of assuring blocks don't grow too large. It simply means that blocks are limited to the amount of gas the transaction contained in them can consume. So put simply, if a transaction consumes too much gas, it will never fit in a block and will never be executed. This can lead to a vulnerability we come across frequently. If data is stored in a variable sized arrays, then accessed via loops over these arrays, the transaction may simply run out of gas and be reverted. This happens when the number of elements in the array grows so large, so usually in production rather than in testing. The fact that test data is often smaller makes this issue so dangerous, since contracts with this issue usually pass unit tests and seem to work well with a small number of users. However, they fail when a project gains momentum and the amount of data increases. It's not uncommon to end up with unretrievable funds if the loops are used to push out payments. All right. Then number three, smart contract vulnerability. Missing parameter or precondition checks. One of the simplest programming mistakes we encounter is either not validating the arguments of a function or forgetting essential checks for an operation to be valid. Often this includes address parameters not being checked for zero address. For example, not verifying that a user has sufficient token balance to execute a certain operation. Another good example is access control, where only a certain type of user should be authorized to call a function, but this check is never performed. Usually the result of a sloppy design process. It's a good idea to have written specifications of all functions stating the parameters, preconditions, and operations to be performed. Okay, and then front running is number four. Potential front running is the hardest issue to prevent in our list of common vulnerabilities. Front running can be designed as overtaking an unconfirmed transaction. This is the result of a blockchain's transparency property. All confirmed transactions are visible in the meme pool before they are included in a block by a miner. Interested parties can simply monitor transactions for their content and overtake them by paying higher transaction fees. These can be automated easily and has become quite common in decentralized finance applications. It's not easy to protect against front running. And then simple logic bugs. Some of the issues above are more specific to contracts. Others are just common to all types of programming. However, the most common one is simple mistakes in the logic of smart contracts. And a simple typo, a misunderstanding of the specification, or larger programming mistakes. They tend to have very severe implications on the security and functionality of the smart contract. And what they have all in common, though, is the fact that they can only be detected if the auditor understands the code base completely and has an insight into the project's intended functionality and the contract specification. So it's really important for these lawyers to understand code, right? So concluding remarks for this article here, things have changed over the last couple of years in the smart contract programming. Countless high profile cases resulting in lost money have made projects aware of the need to take security seriously. We do find that developers are more aware of common vulnerabilities and frequently employ tools such as static code analysis and symbolic execution to automatically scan their code. However, we've never performed an audit that has not resulted in at least one minor issue in the first round, and plenty of really experienced developers have presented us with critical vulnerabilities in their code. The nature of the common issues is such that a manual, full manual smart contract code audit is essential, and this should be performed by an independent team with fresh eyes. So that just shows you, and I wanted to read that article, and then I'll come back here to this lawyer article about this hack that I talked that I started to talk about, because it just shows you the amount of vulnerability that there are in these smart contracts, even though they say code is law, right? So it's not. So anyway. The hack that removed $16 million from the decentralized finance protocol Index Finance. Index Finance is based on Ethereum and produces tokens that track market indexers. A hacker claimed the assets backing the value of the index tokens by finding a vulnerability in the protocol's smart contracts. The attack has been described as a typical DeFi exploit, and I just read you five pretty typical ones. The hacker took advantage of the flash loan mechanism by overloading the protocol with new assets. This lowered the price of the indexed tokens. In a way, it's kind of like a DOS slash front run attack. I don't really know. I don't know. And there might probably is a name for this type of attack. I don't know it. So this lowered the price of the indexed tokens, which then allowed the attacker to mint new ones at an artificially suppressed price and then cash them out. So the hack negatively affected many users, as two of the six out of the six assets of the protocol lost most of their value. So they artificially suppressed the price long enough to mint new ones at that artificially suppressed price and then cash them out. So it's kind of like the opposite of front running, where you go in and you raise the price and then you you sell it right afterwards to cash in on the arbitrage between them. And that's what front running has been doing with these minor extracted value type of stuff. So the two people, core members of the Index Finance, Lawrence Day and Dylan Keller, they managed to identify the hacker. So as an 18-year-old kid, 18-year-old university student, Index Finance wanted to avoid doxing the kid and law enforcement, and including law enforcement, they offered the kid a way out. That young hacker had an out. However, all he had to do was restore the stolen funds minus a 10% bounty. 10% of $16 million. I mean, that's insane. $1.6 million? He could have gotten a $1.6 million. Surprisingly, the young hacker did not want to cooperate. He had his eyes on the prize, buddy. He publicly stated via tweets that he had not infringed the law, but had executed a clever arbitrage trade through a complex series of transactions. In addition, he asked for legal representation from crypto lawyers willing to defend him in court. Now, this lawyers that would pick up this mantle and defend this type of thing, this is where the slimy reputation comes from, right? Something that you know is not right, but some lawyers might see some money there, you know, or maybe on principle. Maybe they don't really like all this code is law assertion. So they're trying to go in and defend this kid out of the principle to illustrate the problem that the whole assertion that code is law can have. So the perpetrator's position recalls the highly debated code is law, in quotes, formulation as expressed in the original DAO hack. Now, if you don't know what the original DAO hack was, back when Ethereum was first forming, they said, well, code is law. We're all in this utopia and la la land, and everybody was dumping their money into Ethereum. And, as part of this DAO the organization, and somebody ended up hacking the DAO and was just draining the funds. And everybody was standing around watching these funds just being drained, all their money that they had put in there in this DAO. And this hacker was just draining it. And then there was this whole thing of going, well, what do we do? You know, we don't want to compromise our principles. and sit there and alter this code ourselves to stop this, because then that goes against everything we stand for, decentralization. Because once we do this, we've compromised the whole idea of decentralization. Well, finally, after a bunch of banging heads against the wall and stuff like that, they did end up stopping the drainage after a ton of money was lost. And thus, they had to fork the blockchain. So when you change the rules of a blockchain, you change the fundamental rules of it, you create a fork. So they forked the blockchain. That original blockchain that had the DAO hack on it is now Ethereum Classic. And so Ethereum, as we know it today, is the changed code that stopped that leak. So that is the original DAO hack that a lot of people talk about. Like, that was the original DAO. And then so from this, so the perpetrator position, the 18-year-old hacker, he recalls the highly debated code is law formulation as expressed in the original DAO hack. From this perspective, if a person executes transactions permitted by the code, then his or her behavior may not be considered lawful. Then his or her behavior may not be considered unlawful. This view was actually backed up. It was affirmed by the Singaporean Court of Appeal, which effectively noted a poor bargain was still a bargain. This position reveals the gap between what is algorithmically permissible and socially or legally acceptable. And this just brings up a huge mushroom of just issues. And I even go as far as to think about like AI. You know, what would AI consider legal and good that a human would consider indecent? And when you start to give things like code and AI and stuff like that full reign over society, things like this happen. So the facts have ignited a discussion within the crypto legal community. The Index Finance has, of course, a different opinion on the legality of the perpetrator's actions. Jason Gottlieb, a well-known lawyer in the crypto space, responded to one of the perpetrator's tweets declaring, "Code is not law. Law is law. And what you did was not a clever trade. It was market manipulation. It's illegal and people go to prison for it." Most lawyers in the world would probably agree with Gottlieb. But it is also true that there's an argument that may be used in favor of the perpetrator. This argument invokes one of the main claims of blockchain technology and smart contracts, namely that code is able to eliminate the need for intermediaries by producing predictable outcomes. In addition, the exploitation could be seen as a failure of indexed finance smart contracts. So it was the developer's fault. It wasn't the fault of this kid who happened to be walking by and seeing a dollar on the street, right? Yeah, it was the person who had a loose wallet. So, I mean, it's janky and it's shiesty, but you know what? The kid has some kind of he's got a point, you know? This is a brain scrambler, you know? Like, this is the problem with the whole decentralization code is law standpoint. And then this is why I'm researching AI and where all this is going to go. I mean, can we be opening ourselves into a Malthusian trap, you know, of the whole automation structure gets going and we know it's bad and we know that we're compromising our morals and our values and everything like that in order to get ahead. Everybody knows it's bad, but nobody can stop the train because any one single individual that stands up against it will just immediately get mowed down. So unless we all, as more than 51% of a society, stand up in coordination together, then the entire mechanism just does not stop. And is code is law? Will that put that mechanism into momentum, you know, to the point where we're unable to stop it? I don't know. So apart from what happened to indexed finance, within an ecosystem yearning for self-regulation and accountability, it may seem contrary to seek legal enforcement when things turn out badly, right? So yeah, you're anti-cops, but when something goes wrong, you call the cops, right? So one has to decide, is it possible to embrace and respect the mandates of a legal system, or must parties choose to move towards ever greater decentralization to avoid the application of a nation's laws? Oh man. Okay. So let me read that sentence again. One has to decide, is it possible to embrace and respect the mandates of a legal system, or must parties choose to move towards ever greater decentralization to avoid the application of a nation's laws? Cherry picking among favorable legal rules as the need arises seems an unfair option. Right? So while seeking prosecution for market manipulation or other crimes could be seen as a defeat for the DeFi industry. So if you call the cops and you're anti-cop, then that kind of seems a little bit of a defeat for your cause there, right? Because then suddenly you're relying on the institution that you don't like the most. So, of course, there's always another view on this issue, and there always is a middle ground, regardless of how polar things get. There always is a middle ground. So one could easily argue that the code used to create smart contracts does not represent the entire social agreement, in quotes, surrounding the use of a given protocol. So that code does not represent the entire social agreement. It just represents the low level look at it. So making individual gains by destroying the wealth of a community should be seen as unacceptable and a violation of this more holistic social agreement, right? So if you are one person destroying the wealth of an entire society, you can be taken out because it violates the more holistic social agreement. Which is why we don't have monarchs, you know, because that is one person controlling it. However, that monarch stands outside of the larger mechanism that I was talking about. So that is the one person who is looking down that is able to change everything by just a decree. So how do you balance that? You know, some kind of outside force being able to control all the mechanisms and put a stop to it without relying on coordination of more than 51% of the people to all rise up, because that's very, very difficult to do. Or that one person violating the entire holistic social agreement if that monarch does indeed decide to turn into a fascist. So it's some severely crazy stuff to think about. So the index finance hack shows once more that certain values should always be respected within the industry. Hackings and exploitations portray cryptocurrencies in a bad light and may hinder the growth of the market. And so this is kind of that informal agreement within the crypto space. You know, Janet Yellen talked about, who would you rather trust more, you know, shadowy super coders, you know, or the big banks that have been around for a long time and their big marble structures, you know? So actually, I would rather trust the shadowy supercoders, because as you can see here, hacking and exploitation portray cryptocurrencies in a bad light and may hinder the growth of the market. So the hackers will kind of look out for you. So Andre Kronhe says here in this tweet that that Eagle cites, every time a hack occurs, one thing is clear. Devs band together and try to help better the ecosystem. LARPing virtue signalers try to farm clout by shite-talking projects because they have nothing else. Contribute zero and just leech the ecosystem. So the people that are just leeching on the ecosystem, they will get purged out one way or another. It's crypto Twitter makes that happen. Anytime there's somebody in there who's a clear shyster, will immediately get purged out by the people in crypto Twitter, by people just basically ratioing them on their tweets and stuff like that. So anyway, so it goes on, the article ends here. Law enforcement could be seen as a defeat in the short term, but in the long run, it may foster fair behavior among people operating in this space. The code is not law, but it would be amazing in the name of contractual freedom to run a system based on code without actually needing to apply the law. So that was a good article. Thank you, Eagle, for writing this article. It was, you know, I had to see all these other highlights that I have about Wyoming and DAOs and about, you know, understanding crypto law with Ross Campbell of Lex DAO. And I guess I'm going to have to save those for another episode, because I spent this entire episode focusing specifically on Legal Eagle's stuff. So go give Eagle a follow. I went off his screen. Here it is. Yeah, right here on Twitter. It's EagleLex_ETH. He does not know I'm talking about this article. So I will tag him in this. That being said, I will talk to you guys tomorrow, as I always do. Okay. Bye.